What's up, everybody? Welcome to a Breakout Finder podcast. I'm your host, Nate Liss. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me, as always, is Ryan Lopes. You can find him on Twitter at StillRyan5. And tonight, and I'm gonna fuck this last name up, is Ian Harditz of Roto World. You can find him on Twitter at iHarditz, H-A-R-T-I-T-Z, on Twitter. That was an impossible task. Why was that so hard?
You didn't even get to his last name. It was, you called him Ian.
I was about to say, I think you're the first guy to mess up my first name, man. I've heard many butchers on the last one. Real quick story. When I got suspended from Twitter, I had some buddies help me out, try to get me back on. And someone's response was, I don't know, maybe don't have your handle sound like a fucking porn website.
You set yourself up. You set yourself up.
I was so worried about the hurdle of your last name that your first name caught me off guard. And first off, why does the uppercase I look like an L? What font is this? Can we do something about this?
It's a flaw in the English language, man. I'm with you right there. We got to change the alphabet. After we figure out these week 4 plays, you know, we're moving on to that.
Yeah,
we're gonna get all into week 4. But before we get ahead to week 4, and Nate gets out of his own head and learns Ian's first and or last name, man, we got to talk about, you know, week 3 is now in the books. You know, the sample sizes are getting bigger as the weeks go along here. Some preseason takes are looking smarter. Some preseason takes are looking a bit sillier, to be polite. And we got some bye weeks this week. I think San Francisco, I'm not sure if anyone else is on a bye as well. So we got the byes creeping in and here. So I think the biggest thing, Ian, and where we want to start is this quarterback play. Last week, week 3, we saw teams with Daniel Jones under center. We saw teams with Kyle Allen under center. We saw teams with Mason Rudolph under center. We saw a Teddy Bridgewater-led New Orleans Saints team, some Taysom Hill sprinkled in and stuff like that. So a lot of new faces, a lot of interesting results, especially for Daniel Jones, someone who was legit ridiculed, man. Dude had his name dragged up and down the timeline. Shows out, though, buddy. 4 scores, 2 in the air, 2 on the ground. Looked like straight up redemption tour right out the gate, man. It's got to be cool as shit for Daniel Jones, for Giants fans who unfortunately lost Saquon Barkley for up to 8 weeks. Dude, where I gotta know where you stood with Daniel Jones pre-draft. Were you one of them, you know, one of the folks on the timeline like myself who, you know, might have had Twitter fingers? I got a couple jokes off. Were you excited for the Daniel Jones era to start, Ian?
I'm not a huge, like, draft grind college film type guy. I mean, you guys know me. I was all up in the AAF season in February. So I like to wait a little bit, but I'd be lying if I said, you know, I knew this Daniel Jones guy was going to be great. It seemed like a, you know, as consensus of a industry-wide opinion that Daniel Jones wasn't going to be good as Josh Allen was last year. So right. I think we all need to, you know, no matter how bad the completion percentage in college is, no matter how, you know, dim-witted the franchise might look in the selection, probably ease off a little bit on the offseason takes until we see these guys at least take some preseason snaps, maybe.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. Again, Daniel Jones, the ACC film, didn't have many people quite, you know, understanding a top 10, you know, 6th overall selection from a franchise that obviously took a running back early the year prior. Gettleman, you know, was the butt, again, of many jokes. But Daniel Jones, man, at Duke, over 1,300 yards on the ground, doesn't quite have Josh Allen's arm strength, as you were kind of, you know, drawing a slight comparison to there. But I guess one could, if his first start was any indication, one might assume his fantasy floor is somewhat safe given the possibility of these rushing touchdowns. This rushing upside. This podcast obviously has talked a ton about the Konami code. Rich Rebar, dude is a legend. Any takes going forward? Again, it's a 1 week sample size. You know, it's very small. It was promising. Do you have any kind of faith rolling this dude out in any sort of capacity, whether it's daily, whether it's redraft, dynasty thoughts, anything, Ian?
Yeah, he looked good. And I mean, I think we all kind of thought the Tampa Bay defense was a little bit overrated after the first 2 weeks. But at the same time, I mean, they were a very sound tackling unit to start the season. And Giants went out and scored, was it 32 points on him? So credit to Danny Dimes there. The two things he brought to the table that they were lacking was, A, the mobility you talked about. I mean, Eli was just such a statue there. It wasn't even just that Eli wasn't picking up rushing yards. It was he couldn't even really move around in the pocket. And when you can't move in the pocket, D-lines can just pin their ears back and just cause even more problems to the offensive line. So because he can move, the Giants' not great O-line is going to get better because of that, which we already saw. The second thing, even if he doesn't have Josh Allen's arm strength, he's still willing to throw downfield. And, you know, we saw that. I mean, he had a dime downfield, Darius Slayton, at one point. I don't know. I mean, I didn't see enough from one game's worth of action to, you know, crown this guy as the next big thing or anything. But just the fact that he's willing to run, willing to throw downfield is going to help elevate the rest of these guys in the offense like we saw.
Nate, are you hanging your hat on Danny Dimes' 1 week sample size right here, buddy? Are you pushing the chips all in?
You know, Ian, that's your name, right? He may have not seen enough to crown Danny Dimes, but I saw enough to tell you that Daniel Jones is better than Jimmy Garoppolo is. Look, that Tampa Bay defense that you're talking about, they stifled Cam Newton. Cam Newton had a terrible game against Tampa Bay. I can't count the amount of tweets that went out talking about what is Cam Newton doing. It looks terrible out there. Jimmy Garoppolo did not look good against Tampa Bay. No surprise. And then Daniel Jones breathes life back into this offense. Look, Sterling Shepard, seven catches, 100 yards, a touchdown, 110 air yards, an ADOT of 12.2 in week one with Eli Manning on 6 targets, an ADOT of 3. Evan Ingram, of course, the yak monster, he has 83 yards after the catch, goes over 100 yards for the day. He is currently in 2019 on a 2018 George Kittle yards after the catch pace at 49.6. George Kittle was at 54. And then, what about Darius Slayton, right? The forgotten man in this offense, 5 targets, 3 for 82, over 100 air yards, an ADOT of 21.4. Daniel Jones put life back in this offense. This offense looked fucking dead, and he brought it back to life with CPR or whatever he does.
I'll be honest, man. I totally forgot about Darius Slayton. That might have just been me. That might have just been my bad. But I guess if Nate
he was hurt to start the year.
He was. Okay. So fair enough. So it wasn't just me just totally moving him to the back of my head. He was hurt. But again, Daniel Jones CPR. He gave Darius Slayton CPR. Darius Slayton is back. Danny Dimes is here. Man, let's go ahead and talk about Carolina trotting out Kyle Allen. Cam Newton, Nate kind of hit on it a little bit here. Didn't look like the Cam Newton that many of us would have expected. I was super high on him entering the season. We were told that rehab was going well and that, you know, the arm was going to be right. We were all excited. I'm excited to get Ian's take on Curtis Samuel here. Your dude was talking him up leading up to last week's game. But Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, obviously Christian McCaffrey, Greg Olsen turning back, you know, the hands of time. So this offense had pieces through 2 weeks, though. Cam Newton wasn't looking like that guy. Got banged up a little bit. Now, obviously missed last week. I believe already set to miss next week. And my quick takeaway from last week's performance after watching Kyle Allen was that, you know, the Panthers now have that perfect window to kind of let Cam have all that time, not rushing back. Obviously, there were some hot takes on the timeline about how now this is Kyle Allen's team. Cam's going to be completely relegated. I'm not going that far. Obviously, that's a bit too hot takey, even for me, even for this show. Kyle Allen, four touchdowns himself, 19 to 26 passing, 261 yards. Ian, man, you were Birdman hand rubbing up and down the timeline. You were ready for that Curtis Samuel, you know, explosion. We didn't quite get it. I believe he got his first 3 or 4 looks, though, and it looked like maybe a big day was coming. You got to be excited about Allen, you know, on the controls for another week here. Any thoughts on Curtis Samuel kind of running it back or DJ Moore or old man Greg Olsen not looking like old man Greg Olsen anymore?
Man, I wanted the Curtis breakout game. He found the end zone. He had another one, like literally broke open on the slant and the ball just kind of got batted down the line of scrimmage. So almost had the 2-touchdown call, but it is what it is, guys. We'll get another one up for week 4. But look, going into the season, this Carolina offense, we knew Cam was recovering from shoulder surgery. He was developing this new throwing motion. And the kind of big takeaway was, okay, if we're getting Cam's normal rushing ability, he's got DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey. For the first time in his career, he had these guys he could just dump the ball off to. Didn't even need to have a big ADOT. And these guys could go make plays after the catch. Well, we got to week 1, and Cam, unfortunately, you know, hurt his foot in, what, week 3 of the preseason. So Cam couldn't run, and clearly this was impacting his ability to throw because entering, you know, after those 2 weeks, Only the Bears and Trubisky and the Dolphins with Fitzpatrick had a higher percentage of uncatchable targets than Cam Newton and the Panthers. So it wasn't that surprising to see Kyle Allen come in and have all the success because the Panthers are loaded at these skill positions. I mean, DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, both these guys, I think, I mean, could be wide receiver ones on a lot of teams. So the fact you got two of them, you know, probably the best dual threat running back in the league outside of Alvin Kamara. I mean, it's weapons everywhere in this offense. So to see Kyle Allen, you know, hit his open receivers, he deserves some credit for it. And yeah, and
absolutely,
we should, you know, we were talking about the Tampa Bay defense doing a good job against guys. Cardinals defense has not done a good job against anyone. So
anybody. Yeah.
Let's chill on it a little bit. It was one of these games where, you know, I didn't see Kyle Allen necessarily taking it over. I don't know that. Again, I agree with you. Like, not Kyle Allen's team. Once Cam's healthy, he'll be out there. But it's good to see at the least that they got a little bit of a stopgate until Cam gets right.
Yeah, no, it's again, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with these two players. You know, Nate, we spent a ton of time all offseason, man, talking about was it Curtis Samuel, was it DJ Moore, who was the right wide receiver one when Cam Newton was under center. It certainly looked like DJ Moore. You know, Curtis Samuel was amassing the air yards. I know you made it a point to kind of throw up the charts after every game here and make that known. You know, Curtis Samuel was getting open deep. That's been a consistent element of his game. Unfortunately, Cam, due to the, you know, the medical complications, whatever he was fighting against, just wasn't getting it done. Nate, are you excited to see again Kyle Allen locked and loaded for another week here? Do we need Cam Newton under center to unlock these pass catchers?
Well, look, man, you know, Cam Newton, surprisingly, so far in two games in 2019 was actually up in his average depth of target to 8.7 from 7.2 in 2018. So that's good to see because we all thought that Cam Newton was going to suppress this offense. In the first 2 weeks of the year, Curtis Samuel was number 8 overall in air yards, and that's on 7 less targets than DJ Moore, and he actually had 50 more air yards. So he was taking his shots, and yeah, we did talk about this. Cam Newton hasn't been the most accurate quarterback throughout his career. That's been one thing that's always been touched on was his touch. And then it's kind of reared its ugly face once again as things continue. But with DJ, in the first 2 weeks, man, his A-dot was really low, right? We looked at DJ. He was catching, you know, 8 balls, 9 balls, 10 balls. He had an A-dot of 8.8 with Cam. Here comes Kyle Allen. Kyle Allen didn't take a lot of shots in terms of attempts, but A-dot rises to a 14.5. So it's a strange dichotomy because if Curtis Samuel, if those balls are landing, he's destroying even greater than he is already, whereas DJ Moore is actually being utilized a little deeper down the field with Kyle Allen. So it's kind of a pick one or the other. Who are you rooting for? Are you rooting for Curtis Samuel? Are you rooting for DJ Moore, or is this just a one-off game? Cam Newton's going to come back. It's his job. Obviously, they're going to give him chances until he completely flops, and I don't see that happening. But good for Kyle Allen. Who knows? Maybe trade asset, maybe a backup. They spent a third-round pick on Will Greer. Where is he in this, right? So it's an interesting situation. If I'm Will Greer, you know, I'm just what about me, right?
And maybe, you know, so the Danny Dimes experiment was a success, at least through week one. We are happy enough with Kyle Allen. Now, maybe I just didn't spend a ton of time on the timeline last week, but the Mason Rudolph hype might have exceeded both of those players. And he was the one player when the dust all settled that did not look, you know, quite on the level of a Daniel Jones, of a Kyle Allen. You know, the box score really doesn't do him a ton of justice. He looked kind of rough all game long. I believe Juju might have broke off like a 70-plus yard, you know, catch and score that obviously padded his own stats, and we'll talk about Juju here in a second. But Ian, man, was there, you know, the Mason Rudolph James Washington relationship was talked about a ton. Obviously, DFS plays for season long, whatever it was. Everyone knows what they accomplished in college, so people thought that was, you know, James Washington was kind of that safe buoy for Mason Rudolph. Didn't look that way in week one. Of course, Ben out the entire season, so it's Mason Rudolph from here on out, unless things go again drastically the other way. But where's your confidence level in Mason Rudolph and this Pittsburgh offense as a whole?
I'm holding off on too many extreme opinions about him. It was a tough road game. This 49ers front seven is really legit this year.
Yeah, defense is solid.
Nick Bosa's pressure numbers are out of this world. D Ford's banged up, but he played like 15 snaps and he was you know, making plays on those few snaps he was in there. Quan Alexander, one of the better off-ball linebackers. So pretty tough spot for him to walk into. He did hit the big juju completion, you know, to kind of boost his stats. I think it was like in the second half because it was just a terrible game in the first half. But, yeah, I mean, the problem with the Steelers offense at this point is – other than Juju, and you could even kind of debate whether or not he's one of these true, like, elite wide receiver one talents, they just don't have these guys anymore that's really forcing defense's hands. No more Le'Veon, who you can, you know, split out wide and he can, you know, undress a safety in man coverage. No more AB, you know, whatever your opinions are on AB, still a guy that's going to demand defense's attentions every time he's out there. Now Vance McDonald, he's gone. They just traded for Nick Vannett before the show started, so now he's a tight end. You know, Deontay Johnson.
Steel.
we got the shower narrative with him and James Washington going on, but James Washington is still a guy that, you know, we've seen more or less a boom bust guy in the regular season at least. So just a whole lot of unproven parts in Pittsburgh, and you know, that includes Mason Rudolph. So yeah, I find it surprising how willing we were to pretty much say the Steelers offense is gonna get back to, you know, going well. I think it was because they traded their first round pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick, so we were all like, okay, if the Steelers feels as good about this guy, maybe we should too. But this Steelers offense could very well just be in a below average to average unit. So I think we should hesitate on assuming there's going to be more than one fantasy relevant receiver here.
Yeah. Nate, we'll let you throw the proverbial cape on for Juju here. We saw you lift up those shades in a little bit of shock. but real quick before you touch on Juju, I need to know. Choose or die, Nate, Deontay Johnson or James Washington. Who are you saddling up with? Whether it's for season long, whether it's dynasty outlook, I would love to get the people need your opinion on this stuff.
Well, listen, this is the Breakout Finder podcast, so I got to go into the Breakout Finder.
Let's talk about it.
Define this question. Look, James Washington, 2018 draft class, you know, second round pick. That year, he was number three overall in the breakout finder with a 32.2% breakout percentage, which is relatively high. You know, I don't mind Deontay Johnson. I've heard some over-the-top comparisons. I think I can't remember who we had on that mentioned that somebody else had mentioned that he looked like Antonio Brown on the field.
Yeah, Mike Renner, Pro Football Focus. That was his player comparison coming out.
Here's the deal, though.
Come on,
Over
Mike.
Over the course of 3 weeks, here's what we have seen. Dante Moncrief is gone. He has fallen
dust
off the Dunza face of the planet Earth. It is. If you're a flat Earth truther, you may as well assume that he walked right the fuck off the edge. And then Ryan Switzer, who was going to be the number three that we heard, has also taken a back seat. So if you look at week one, you got James Washington, 52% of the offensive snaps, Johnson 36. Week two, Washington 60%, Johnson 47%. Week three, Washington 92%, Johnson 79%. So it's pretty much been a kind of an even adjustment the whole way. The difference between the two, Johnson's in that third wide receiver role right now. Washington's in that second wide receiver role. Who really knows how this is going to turn out? Mason Rudolph, you go back to college, he was airing it out, and Washington was his guy. So the belief is that he's going to get back to that, but they've had a hard schedule so far. They had to face New England. They faced Seattle. Last week, San Francisco, like Ian talked about. So these weren't an easy couple of matchups to start the week. Injuries, exits to, you know, players that have been in this offense. If I had to pick one player that I was going to stick with season long and dynasty, I'm actually going James Washington. And I don't think that it's that close right now. I need to see a lot more from Johnson. He was a guy that rose in the draft and shocked most of us where he was selected. But you got to trust the Steelers' ability to draft wide receivers. They've proved it year over year that they are good at doing this. But I'm going to take James Washington.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, sorry, real quick.
No, go ahead, bro.
Deontay Johnson had like that 40-yard touchdown last week. But if you watch it, man, like Jason Verrett just stopped running. He even sent a tweet out after the game like, I got to be better on that. So this was not, you know, sick double move. Wow, look at all this talent.
Right.
You know, I respect Mike as an analyst, but can we not compare guys like to future first ballot Hall of Famers? Like, come on.
Yeah, we always, again, we tend to fall down that trap with multiple players across multiple positions every single offseason. It's one of my favorite parts for sure, to see who gets compared, and then months later to see how wildly off base all that was. Deontay Johnson was an interesting study. Like Nate said, rose late in the quote unquote process. 64% college dominator rating, 73% college yards per reception. Not a standout athlete by any means, but one that Ian said he wasn't a tape watcher himself, but one that the college tape watchers did gravitate towards because he did look somewhat effortless on film. His ability to get open, like Ian said, maybe a different story last Sunday where he did score, but more or less a broken play of sorts. I do want to talk about, while we're on the topic of the Pittsburgh offense, the Pittsburgh run game. James Conner has struggled as well. Ian said it the best. The whole offense with Big Ben going down has definitely taking a step back. Obviously no more Le'Veon Bell, obviously no more Antonio Brown. The James Conner, he was one that many were hanging their hat on, this offseason going into the season long leagues for some pretty, obvious reasons. But again, through 3 weeks, hasn't really looked that part. Is it time, Ian? I'm going to ask you the same question too, Nato. Is it time that we get Jalen Samuels more involved, given his ability, as a receiver, kind of his versatility? Is this all on James Conner, Ian? Is it time to throw up the Jalen Samuel bat signal of sort, bro?
Potentially, man. I mean, Connor's not helping his cause, and it's just weird to see because last year I think he played like the first 12 weeks before he got hurt, and the only guys with more broken tackles in that span were Saquon Barkley and freaking Kareem Hunt. Like, Connor was amazing last year, like breaking tackles and stuff. It wasn't like he was just running through these gaping holes that were there in the offense. He was balling out. And, if Jalen Samuels can do more, then go ahead. But right now, it's looking like a situation in fantasy that we're just not going to get this usual Pittsburgh bell cow that we're used to. Connor only played 68% of the snaps last week, and that's a lot in a lot of offenses, but not really in Pittsburgh. I mean, the big thing coming into this year for Connor and Juju to an extent was, okay, you got two talented guys, no doubt about that, but I think the reason they were drafted so high was because we've seen absurd volume in this offense year after year after year. AB and Juju had over 160 targets last year. Like, that is ridiculous. Yeah. Through three games, Juju hasn't had more than 8 targets in a game. We haven't seen Connor have more than 15 carries in a game. It's part of that is the tough schedule start. They haven't really gotten rolling. Big Ben's not out there, but I don't think this volume is necessarily going to come back in this, what's looking like an average offense. So we got to, adjust our expectations for both Juju and Connor.
Yeah, so it's like we're gonna somewhat pump the brakes here, but again, as a whole, the offense has changed. It changed before our eyes. Obviously, the Ben injury changed that. Nate, anything in particular about Samuels? Are you curious enough to kind of venture down that road?
I mean, he can't be that expensive. If you've got the roster space and you would have put him on there in the event that an 0-3 Pittsburgh decides to go away from James Conner for whatever reason. I mean, when they're 0-3, unless James Conner is hurt, I don't see why they're going to shelf the guy. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense why they're not going to try to get everything they can out of him. I don't know how many more losses Pittsburgh can sustain before they start to tear this season apart. At 0-3, I think I heard something that the chances of making the playoffs are like 11%. So they're pretty much a lock at this point to not make the playoffs. So we're only three games into the regular season. It's not good. They haven't had an easy schedule, like Ian touched on as well. But there's still some tough games in here. Cincinnati's been putting up big points. That's next. Then they got the Ravens. Then they've got the Chargers. I mean, it's not necessarily going to get that much easier here for a stretch. As far as James Conner, Ian touched on it too. When you look at the broken tackles, he was breaking a tackle every 10 attempts last year. He's only has one broken tackle this year. And it's on the third, one every 34 at this point. So that's dropped a lot too. But his volume, right? His volume has dropped, 7 carries a game, 6 carries a game. So we're watching that dwindle as well. But when you lose Big Ben, when you lose Antonio Brown, when you lose Vance McDonald, the continuity of this offense, the veterans, the elite veterans that were in this offense, those guys are gone now. I don't know that it gets better before it gets worse. I could see Jalen Samuels getting more touches just because they're trying to mix things up. But at no point do I see Jalen Samuels leapfrogging James Conner. His 2018 was pretty much a signed signed, you know, a letter there that said your job is yours till we replace you with a higher draft capital player. He's not going anywhere.
Right. Yeah. It's gonna take a lot more than a few weeks into the season to unseat someone that has James Conner's, you know, resume, albeit, you know, a season long or something like that. So definitely fair to pump the brakes there. A few more quarterbacks here and a few more tangents that are, you know, associated with their particular offenses. Kyler Murray. You know, the Arizona offense, Nate's already shaking his head here. Man. The Arizona offense was one that Nate and I spent, you know, a ton of time on, as every, you know, as every fantasy player did. They were one of the darlings, of course, you know, Cliff Kingsbury coming in, talking up the volume, the play speed. And we've seen some of that to an extent. What we haven't seen, in my opinion, you know, is Murray really fully unlocking his ability as a runner, kind of opening up this offense here. Ian, I want to get your take, you know, obviously 3-game sample size here. Kyler Murray, curious kind of where you were on him leading up into the season and kind of where he is now. Are you disappointed, hopeful, sad, hungry, tired? What are you, bro?
I was very high on Kyler like the rest of everyone. I mean, how could you? All right, yeah, he's short, but to see someone with his rushing ability literally break the NCAA record for most yards per attempt in a season, I mean, yeah, of course I was high on him. And I'm not really jumping off this train just yet, especially in terms of fantasy. I mean, look, this is a team with a 5.5 win total coming into the year. I think we all knew they weren't going to really contend for a playoff spot, so hasn't really shocked me to see the whole team struggle. But Kyler, first two games, throws for over 300 yards, goes into Baltimore, throws for 340. Last week, we finally kind of saw some of that rushing upside get unlocked, you know, 8 carries, 69 yards, you know, very nice amount against the Panthers. So we have not seen him put this together in one game yet, but still, like, and he has not played well. That second half was terrible to watch. I mean, he did not do good. He's running out of the pocket too quickly. You know, we're not seeing the O-line help him out. Definitely not, you know, not taking the league by storm like a lot of people thought, but still just three games. And from a fantasy perspective, we're seeing all that volume. We're seeing the terrible Cardinals defense we thought was there that's going to force them to play from behind and, you know, kind of rack up a lot of pass attempts. So, no, he's not taking over the league just yet. But the best is still to come from Kyler Murray in this offense, I think, you know. And, yeah, and the good thing about it, too, is that, you know, with this four wide receiver offense, we're seeing Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald get fed targets and both out of the slot. So it's amazing, like, really outside of kind of like Stephon Gilmore, Darius Slay, McCourty a little bit, Xavien Howard a little bit. Most top corners don't move into the slot. They might move sideline to sideline, but they almost never move into the slot, and we really haven't seen defenses overhaul their scheme to face this Cardinals offense yet. So as they continue to click and get better and better, we're going to see Kirk and Fitz keep getting this volume, but they're going to be getting the volume against defenses, you know, third and fourth best cornerbacks out there. So, I'm investing in both those guys still. I think David Johnson, he's still one of these guys with the three-down role. The Cardinals have been, I think they're running the ball in like 25 or 26% of the snaps. I mean, they are as pass-heavy as possible, and it's going to stay that way as long as they're still trailing all the time. But at the same time, you know, David Johnson's also one of, I think, like 11 running backs with over 15 targets a season. So, finally seeing him, you know, split out a little bit, getting to use his receiving targets. So, I mean, maybe guys like Andy Isabella, they finally got rid of Crabtree's corpse. Demir Bird showed a little bit. So I think the best is still to come in this Cardinals offense.
For sure. No, I think you hit the nail on every single possible head there. Nate, I would love for you to put a bow on anything Kyler Murray related. But if there was one player in this Cardinals offense that we spent a lot of time on, I'm not even going to mention a certain Iowa State wide receiver. Oh. Christian Kirk, Nate. His targets through three games, 12, 8, and 12. The volume, as Ian shared, is definitely there. However, the efficiency, you know, the big plays haven't really found themselves yet. And again, maybe it's a product of, as Ian shared, just the up and down nature of Kyler Murray's, you know, kind of early season play here. I'm with Ian. I'm holding on to all my Christian Kirk shares. Larry Fitz is still looking like a first ballot player himself. So the pieces are there. They are performing. The breakout might be delayed a little bit. Nate, I can't imagine you have soured any way, shape, or form on Christian Kirk.
No, man, not at all. I mean, look, Christian Kirk is getting the volume. It was just touched on. That's a big thing. And currently this year, Christian Kirk has an 8.2 ADOT. You know who else does? Michael Thomas. So it's interesting that, you know, people are going to maybe pick that apart, but look at the guys around him. T.Y. Hilton currently sitting at an 8 even. So there's other guys that people covet that they're not going to throw in the same classification as Christian Kirk. And Christian Kirk's been really good this year outside the top 15 in air yards. But you know who isn't? 36-year-old Larry Fitzgerald, number 10 in air yards with 324. And you know why that is? Because Kyler Murray is number 1 in pass attempts in the NFL with 137. And he's number 11 in pass yards. So he may not be rushing as much as we want, but he's throwing way more than we ever expected he would. So it's working both ways. When he starts getting the ground game going a little more, that floor is going to come up. But I'm still buying Christian Kirk, and people should be too. His overall points in PPR are decent because the targets have been high, but these games could be much bigger blow-up games. If you go to patreon.com/breakoutfinder, we've been doing profiles on players. Christian Kirk got touched on. We used the breakout finder to show some of his college metrics, but we talked about his air yards. The air yards are there, man. He's getting a ton of work. This last game wasn't pretty. He got a lot of targets that weren't deep down the field. But again, this is a product of Kyler Murray as a rookie, a new offense. It's in flux. I think they're calling up Andy Isabella. I think that's what that was when
out of
Ian
the bullpen.
Said, yeah, they took that corpse of Crabtree and threw it with Dante Moncrief off the flat earth edge. So, we don't know. I don't know where that goes. I don't know if it comes back around.
It's, you know, in that movie, in that movie 300, bro, that kicked that dude in that big ass hole. That's you'll find Moncrief. You'll find Moncrief down
somewhere.
There.
That's where Moncrief and Crabtree.
That's where Moncrief and Crabtree are. Yeah.
I will add to the Kirk thing. You know, definitely keep him because look, this guy is electric with the ball in his hands. We haven't really seen him break one yet, but I mean, he even had like a punt return last week where, you know, he started to kind of show that open field ability. So he's getting these short screens, man. Just keep following that volume and yards are going to come.
Absolutely. PlayerProfiler.com draws a Stefon Diggs comparison to Christian Kirk, which always, you know, kind of makes my extremities tingle a little bit. So I am in no way, shape or form, you know, selling or scared off of Christian Kirk. You know, Ian said of the best follow the volume and everything else will kind of fall into place. Boys, the next quarterback that I have listed here, I imagine will be a relatively quick discussion, man. Patrick Mahomes continues to just defy odds, expectations. Again, a lot of the talk this offseason was, you know, natural regression. He just set the bar so stupid high his first year as a starter. Has come out and just, again, nothing's really changed. That high level of play is still there. I bring him up because I personally want to talk about the wide receivers. We know Tyreek Hill is on the mend. He is due back at some point in time here. But in the intermediate, we've seen big games from Sammy Watkins. The Sammy Watkins story is well documented as well. As long as he's healthy, we know about his profile. I know the breakout finder loves Sammy Watkins. I think he was, you know, a universally loved prospect along the lines of an Amari Cooper. But in the intermediate, we saw rookie wide receiver Mecole Hardman kind of flash here and there. He had his blow-up game as well, or a somewhat of a blow-up game. DeMarcus Robinson, man, has been consistent as hell through a couple games as well. So, Ian, what I want to talk about with these wide receivers is what happens when Tyreek Hill returns. Is DeMarcus Robinson, is he kind of locked into some sort of volume? Is Hardman kind of the easy fade, you know, obviously more or less replicating Tyreek Hill's role right now? So what are your thoughts about these pass catchers when Tyreek Hill kind of mixes back in?
Yeah, we only have like a 2-drive sample or something of this offense of full health, you know, with how quickly Tyreek got taken out week one. I tend to think that Mecole Hardman's actually going to fill out these 3 wide receiver sets that once Tyreek gets back. And look, I think the reason why people weren't really all that high on DeMarcus Robinson, excuse me, in week 2 was because we've seen the guy in this offense before, and it was last year. And yeah, he had some big games, but when all these guys are healthy, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are going to be the 1A, 1B targets in some order. Sammy Watkins is for sure locked in as the number 3 target. And then from there, you know, there's just not a ton of, when the running backs are getting targets too, there's just not a ton of consistent volume to go around. Now, when Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback, you don't need a ton of consistent volume to have a big gain, especially when you can run a 40 in under 4.3 seconds like Mecole Hardman. So it's one of those things where, you know, like looking at last week, it's tough with, I said before, follow the volume. Volume will get you yards, but you know, do I want 10 targets from John Ross in a probably Bengals are going to get blown out game with Andy Dalton throwing the ball? Or do I want 5 targets from Patrick Mahomes in, you know, a game where the Chiefs are probably going to score 40 points? So, you know, we do have to keep in mind, you know, how fantasy friendly is each player's opportunity. And, you know, do we really want to mess around with some of these bad offenses? So, no, I don't think Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson are going to necessarily be these consistent fantasy options once Tyreek's back. But, I mean, they're going to be very intriguing options on showdown slates, you know, when the ownership's down. And if one of them – what I'm worried about is that they just kind of split snaps and we see each of them end up with kind of like a 40-50% snap rate and they're just not getting up targets at all. But if – Mecole especially can find his way in those 3 wide receiver sets for 60-70% snaps per game, I think he can actually still be a decent floor boom bust guy.
Love it. Nate, man, this is again, this offense, you want to you know, hit your wagon to any of these options, because again, Patrick Mahomes under center, any of these guys are liable to blow up on any given week. So even if you're not confident rolling them out, you know, the range of outcomes is still enticing enough. Is there a particular wide receiver here, Nate, that you tend to gravitate towards other than say like a Tyreek Hill, who might be a little more obvious?
I mean, you know, to me, he, you know, Ian said it right. I look at Watkins as the wide receiver 3 in this offense. He's got a decent floor at this point because, again, with Patrick Mahomes, we touched on it. All it takes is one pass, and it's a game changer. You put the ball in a guy's hands like Watkins. He doesn't run as fast as Hardman or Hill. He's still plenty fast. He gets open, you know, yards after the catch. He's gone. But here's the deal. You look at week 1, it was the Watkins week. You look at week 2, it's the DeMarcus Robinson week and the Kelsey week. You look at week 3, it's kind of a, you know, a mixed bag. Mecole Hardman game, a little bit of Watkins, a little bit of Robinson. I almost feel like this is best left for best ball. And if I don't have Tyreek Hill, or I don't have Travis Kelce, I'm not really sure if I want to start any of these guys outside of a flex play or a third wide receiver. I mean, they all have an opportunity to blow up, but there's a chance that one of these guys gets phased out on any given week. And yeah, Mahomes is spreading the ball around pretty well right now, despite a couple of blowups. But when Hill comes back and he starts getting his 9-10 targets a week, what's that going to do to the rest of this offense? Somebody is going to start to roll back a little bit, and that wide receiver 4 might be a rotation of, you know, Robinson, Hardman. I don't think Pringle's mixing his way in there at all. But it's going to be more mouths to feed when Hill comes back, especially an elite talent like Hill, you know, a game-changing talent in this offense. So, you know, if it's not Kelce and it's not Hill, they're best left for a flex or a wide receiver 3 for me.
On the other side of that Kansas City ball last week, the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, you know, arguably as hot as a Mahomes, as a Prescott, played some really good ball. Again, context is key. Went against the Dolphins. We all know that. In my opinion, I'm going to need a little help kind of processing through what I saw last week. A little underwhelming against the Kansas City defense that I didn't have very many expectations for. Perhaps, you know, the Mark Andrews foot injury and the lack thereof and kind of his question marks. Maybe Mark Andrews is a more integral part of this offense than you know, his you know, Andrews has been a big factor to start the season. His box score, his production would definitely indicate that. So last week, maybe some deeper-rooted issues there. Hollywood Brown, Nate's going to touch on the air yards for sure. Hollywood Brown's air yards last week were bananas, so perhaps a week too early on him. Could be looking like a huge buy low candidate going into week 4. In general, Ian, any you know, Lamar Jackson thoughts or concerns after his performance against KC last week? I for one thought he'd be able to box no problem, and again, I walked away, I don't want to say disappointed, because his play has definitely been elevated. His ability as a passer has definitely been elevated, at least early on this season. Looked a little bit off last week, but nothing that I'm personally too concerned about. Still very excited about Lamar Jackson's future and ceiling for this season. Any thoughts though, man?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not afraid of Lamar Jackson, you know, underperforming moving forward. Look, two things about this Chiefs defense. One, we know they play way better at Arrowhead. I mean, the Patriots in the AFC Championship were like the first team in 30-something games to score over 30 points in Arrowhead. So to see the Ravens even get to 28, I know a lot of it kind of came with the game almost in hand, you know, with them in comeback mode a little bit, but not the worst performance in the world. And look, they got a lot younger this year too. They got rid of Justin Houston, Eric Berry, replaced them with Frank Clark and Honey Badger. So just a lot more playmaking ability on this Chiefs defense than in years past. They're still going to go some yards, but they can at least make some more plays, I think, than we grew used to. And all right, yes, Lamar, they played Miami and Arizona. I understand those secondaries are trash, but some of those throws he made in that Arizona game were just out of this world. He dropped the one into the bucket to Hollywood Brown to ice the game down the right sideline. He had one down the seam to Mark Andrews that was between like four guys. So, I mean, we have seen noticeable increases in Lamar Jackson's accuracy, which – guess what? That goes back to college. His completion percentage increased all 4 years at Louisville. Still seeing, you know, enough good things out of this offense as a whole with Hollywood Brown, Mark Andrews. It is kind of concerning with the foot thing with Andrews, just because it sounded like him. Because yeah, in week two he didn't practice on Friday, but Harbaugh was pretty much like, "Look, he's going to be out there. We're just giving the guy some rest. No worries." Last week I got way more of a game time decision impression out of the issue. Yeah. So you know, something to monitor. Obviously, foot injury is not ideal, but the big thing I'd say is don't get scared off of Hollywood Brown off this week. He had a good three balls from this last game where he was behind the defense and Lamar just couldn't really put it on him, unfortunately. But we've seen Lamar make those throws the first 2 weeks. They're going to get there, and the volume is there, guys. He had 13 targets in week two, 9 targets last week. Sure, he only had 5 in the first week, and like the first week's dragging down his snap rate, so it kind of looks like he's a part-time player. But you know, they're not going to be up 49-10 or whatever it was that happened.
Right.
Most weeks. So I'm all in on Lamar. I'm all in on Hollywood Brown. And Mark Andrews is healthy enough, man, for sure.
Yeah. Herms Meyer, man. Frisco Josh, the air yards guy, had Hollywood Brown at 217 air yards for week three, 45% share of the Ravens team total. That'll definitely make you happy, man. Again, expecting big things week four. Nate, bro, we spent a lot of time on Miles Boykin this offseason. I don't want to say that we had our Marquise Brown blinders on, but you know, he's come out, you know, dick swinging and maybe made us look a little bit silly, buddy. Any thoughts here? Again, Ian did a pretty good job kind of putting the bow on everything here, but anything Lamar Jackson related, Baltimore Ravens offense related, Hollywood Brown related that you want to share with the good people?
I mean, you know, the rush attempts, they've been up and down a bit, but they're, you know, they're right where you want them to be with Lamar Jackson. Seeing him push the ball downfield, man, that's everything. They, you know, they knew something that we didn't. They knew that Lamar was ready to do this. They went and got Hollywood Brown. Hollywood Brown felt like a stretch. He didn't test at the combine. You know, he's coming off the Liz Frank surgery. This was a guy that had a frail frame, not a big guy. And everybody was like, what the hell is Baltimore doing reaching for a guy like this in the draft? Clearly, they knew what the future of this offense looked like, and they're utilizing him. And like Ian said, when you go look at his snap count, I think the first week was 16%, then it jumps to 50, then I think it was 76% last week. So it's only going up for here. And you touched on the air yards. It's really important. A lot of guys that play fantasy football look at a lot of raw stats. They look at Marquise Brown and see that he had 9 targets, 2 for 49. That means that Lamar Jackson must suck and Marquise Brown's just a rookie that doesn't know what he's doing. But the fact is, man, there's 217 air yards in there. So if any of these balls connect, it is a totally different game. So you've got to be going for these guys. And when we're seeing him consistently being used in this fashion, it feels like at this rate, he's going to be one of these guys that's going to pick up a big play every single game. And if he strings together a couple of them, it's going to be a monster game. And I would definitely like to have him in my lineup over any of the guys that we mentioned in KC other than Tyreek Hill at this point, just because the volume is there and the depth of target in last game, 24.1, it's there too. So they're pushing the ball down the field, man. I'm with Ian again. I'm all in on Lamar still. And Marquise Brown, man, has exceeded expectation.
Yeah, and real quick on Boykin, I was putting together wide receiver quarterback matches before this show. Guys, King Seth Roberts is ruining another fantasy wide.
It's all Seth Roberts does, man. I hate Seth Roberts.
First of all, Derek Carr beating Seth Roberts over Cooper, and now Seth Roberts is literally playing more snaps than Miles Boykin. So you know, Boykin's got that wild athletic profile that, you know, I think we're all excited about going
to see. Yeah.
For now, we got to fucking keep living in Seth Roberts.
Yeah, all Seth Roberts does, man, is just he tends to block a little bit downfield, but all he does really just ruin You know, he just kind of delays the inevitable. He is one of the worst, man. The last kind of quarterback.
Dude, the Montreal shape.
Yeah, he definitely belongs in that deep dark hole as well. One of the last quarterback related topics and tangents we're gonna go on here, and I had to save the best for last year. Nate already kind of took a little bit of a shot to kind of start the show here.
Yeah.
Ian, man, I gotta know about before we kind of break this one down a little bit. I gotta know, what are your thoughts and feelings about Jimmy Garoppolo, the quarterback, the NFL quarterback? Do you have what is your level of confidence in a Jimmy Garoppolo quarterbacked offense?
It's good because Kyle Shanahan's his play caller. And that's really down to here. We don't really know what he is, as you know, if you just threw him on a random team. Like, I don't know how high he'd go among the quarterbacks if we just had a league-wide fantasy draft, because he's only played with, you know, McDaniels and Shanahan. And when he's only played with them, he's pretty much been a top 12 quarterback and, you know, adjusted yards per attempt. So as long as he's still with Shanny, I trust him to make good things happen. The 49ers are number 7 in yards per play this year. With that said, though, I mean, I put Garoppolo, like Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff. These guys, if the play goes off script for a second, man, like nothing good is going to happen. Yeah, like they're not going to create anything on their own, really. So it's an interesting 49ers offense. It's kind of muddled all throughout the place, especially with Tevin Coleman potentially coming back soon. Shanahan's talking about how, you know, having 4 running backs is a good problem to have, as fantasy owners everywhere want to throw up. Jeff Wilson's like a thinner 2019 version of LeGarrette Blount at this point.
It's so frustrating.
Even that wide receiver, man, like it looks like we finally settled in to Goodwin, Pettis, and Debo are going to be in 3 wide receiver sets. But Jalen Hurts coming, probably going to be back after the bye. I could see him throwing a wrench in that. If I had to pick anyone, obviously, other than Kittle, who's a fucking boss, like amazing.
He's that dude.
His blocking is just incredible, too, even just throwing away the fantasy stuff. But
so
I'm confident Debo is going to be in these 3 wide receiver sets, because we've seen, even since the preseason, like Shanahan scheming up reverses. He's getting rush attempts. I mean, week 2 particularly, like Shanahan, just some of the things he was able to do in the screen game and stuff like that was just absurd. So I think Debo is the one guy to own in this offense that you'll be able to somewhat feel comfortable about, you know, throughout the season.
Yeah, I personally foolishly missed out on the Terry McLaurin kind of early waiver wire grab, so I had to quote unquote settle for Debo Samuel. So I also like his you know, the rest of his regular season outlook myself, or you know, my fantasy rosters. Sure hope that's the case. Nate, bro, we're gonna let you out of the cage here, man. You have been known to have some Jimmy Garoppolo related takes, my friend.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks again, the show has been about, of course, looking forward. Obviously, the sample size has been building. So we have 3 games under our collective belts here. Where do you? We were talking pre-show, Nate, you and I. This might be like a weekly segment where we just get a Nate Jimmy G kind of heat check. You know, just to kind of see where things have been sitting. Ian did a good job talking about the backfield, which sucks. I wrote about Matt Breida briefly, who's been getting cucked harder than anybody in the NFL right now. So Nate, tell us about Jimmy G. Where does your heart currently sit with Jimmy G?
So Ian, I got to ask you this, man. Has there ever been a time where having a dick as big as Jimmy Garoppolo does has been as much of a disadvantage as it is for him? There's no fucking advantage here. I go back and look at his season so far. I guess I like the idea that Shanahan is involved. I'm not sure, though, that I like the arm that's throwing the ball. I've never been a fan of Jimmy Garoppolo. I didn't cape up for him earlier in the year, and I feel like we still don't have any sample size. You can finish the season, I won't have enough of a sample to put a finger on Jimmy Garoppolo. Here's what I know, though. Last week against Pittsburgh, you know, not a stellar game. When we go and look at the guys on this roster, we look at the air yards, we look at the usage. I'm happy that Richie James is ascending. But again, Ian said it. If it's not George Kittle, it's Debo Samuel right now. And, you know, I don't know that I'm really looking for anybody else. I don't trust this offense. The run game is totally dismantled. I'm not a fan of Jimmy Garoppolo for so many reasons, and we've gone over this so many times. I just don't know that his week-to-week ceiling is as good as I expected it to be. I mean, I know that the Cincinnati game where they put up 41 points was a blow-up, less than 300 yards, but 3 touchdowns. That was a great game for him. With Jimmy Garoppolo, though, man, it's going to be so matchup dependent for me versus some other quarterbacks where I would give a pass on matchup. You know, Mahomes is matchup proof. There's few guys like that, but I just am not buying in to the hype on you know, Jimmy Garoppolo. Not yet. I'm still not in on it.
Is Jimmy Garoppolo the best California NFL quarterback, though?
Is he?
Other than Rivers. So Carr, Goff, and Garoppolo.
Oh, dude, Carr was absolute cheeks last week, man. Carr was like Flacco level. Luke Falk started a game, and Carr was with those dudes last week, man.
I mean, yeah, I guess if you're gonna put him up next to those guys, you know,
he looks pretty great.
All your ugly friends so that you look better standing in front of them. That's what I do. Yeah, maybe.
Put those shades on.
Yeah, with these on, I mean, you put beautiful people behind me. But, you know, when you talk about Garoppolo, man, I don't know. There's just something about his gameplay and going back through sort of his game log prior to this, there just wasn't enough for me. And he feels like a tough start from week to week. But, you know, kudos to the people that want to start him. You know, what does he have? 5 touchdowns through 3 games this year. So, what's his upside?
He's got 0 rushing floor, too, which definitely doesn't help from fantasy perspective. I will give you that.
And 2 fumbles. Let's go on.
Listen, so we'll take a break here from the direct quarterback kind of quarterback driven narratives. Talk about some other interesting headlines from week 3 and going into week 4 as we look to wind things down on this particular show here. Keenan Allen, Ian, has I was scrolling around today. I didn't have this in the show sheet initially, but after I got a chance to watch what he did last week, again, fucking around on the timeline, I saw someone post, and I do apologize to whoever that someone was. I didn't have the mind to write the whole Twitter handle down, but someone typed out his 16-game pace through 3 weeks, which would stand as follows: 224 targets, 155 receptions, 2,155 yards, and 16 scores. Obviously, that is, you know, I'm over here sweating just reading those numbers. I'm not quite sure he's going to touch that pace, but he looks every bit as confident and can do that. Obviously, some of the chips fell his way. Hunter Henry out, Melvin Gordon holding out. Obviously, Austin Eckler doing a really good job in his place. Mike Williams maybe not hobbled a little bit. Either way, Phillip Rivers, Keenan Allen, we know that connection goes beyond, you know, three games this season. So again, not sure that 16-game pace is going to play out that way, but I wouldn't really be surprised if it were to. Ian, what Keenan Allen's doing right now is it looks pretty special, man. You got to be pretty fired up.
Yeah, I mean, you can twist these stats from 3 games like to any absurd thing you want to do. My version is he's one of only 6 receivers with at least 42 targets in weeks 1 through 3 over the last 10 years. So I get it, kind of arbitrary number, but good God, this guy's getting fed the ball. And, you know, with his chemistry with Rivers at this point, it's just ridiculous. And like you said, man, I mean, there's no Gordon or Henry to really force Rivers to throw the ball anywhere else. And guess what? Rivers hasn't. So, but at this point, I mean, look, I said before about Kirk and Fitzgerald, like, the fact that Keenan lines up in the slot so much, he's going to avoid a lot of these number one cornerbacks. And even when he doesn't, like, it doesn't matter. He roasted Darius Slay all game in week 2. And, you know, people were hating on Darius Slay. I respect the guy for moving in the slot. A lot of these, you know, shallow cornerbacks won't even do that. So, you know, kudos to Slay for at least, you know, taking on the matchup. But Keenan won that all game. And, you know, now he gets to go to Miami, who, oh, man, Minka leaves. They bring in I forget the other slot corner's name, like Jawal Wiltz or something. Now he's hurt. So now we're now on the 3rd nickelback, which means they'll probably have Xavien Howard follow him all over the field.
Yeah.
You know what happens when Xavien Howard faces a really good route runner like Amari Cooper? So, I mean, man, like, I don't know who in this league other than – I don't know if anyone can stop Keenan Allen, even against the Patriots in the divisional round. Like, he double-moved Stephon Gilmore for a 40-plus yard touchdown. So,
yeah.
Really – Keenan Allen's entire career almost, since the day he stepped a foot on NFL field, like, no one's really been able to guard him. It's just he wasn't healthy for the first few years of a career. Yeah. Now he is. Like, the Keenan Allen health problems seem like a thing of the past at this point, and we're seeing what happens when the dude's healthy.
For sure. And I know, I believe it was this past offseason, Ian, you were throwing up plenty of gems in the timeline, you know, proclaiming Keenan Allen the premier route runner, and that's I think how things have played out. I'm not sure anyone is really gonna go out of the way to argue with that. Nate, before we move on here, buddy, any kind of closing thoughts on Keenan Allen? Are you just as excited as we are?
Am I excited? Listen, man. I own Keenan Allen in all my dynasty leagues. I was dropping bombs on every single league, just talking the most shit you can ever imagine in your whole life. It felt so good. It felt so good. And I know some of those guys in the league listen to this. Just let it wash over you. It feels good. But the one thing I will add is, despite the fact that his target share is so high, as Ian noted here, 2018 is ADOT 8.6. His ADOT is actually higher in 2019 at 11.8. So his target share is incredible right now. We're seeing a rise in the depth of it. This could be a very special year if it keeps up. And again, as Ian noted, what's his competition? What's his competition for target share, especially being in the slot? And man, I'm so psyched for this next game. It's going to be ugly, man. If you're facing Keenan Allen, you definitely want to put an upside play in there in your flex. Somebody, you know, a McLaurin, a Marquise Brown, maybe put in DeMarcus Robinson if you got him, because you're going to need a prayer.
We're gonna go. Somewhat rapid fire here, guys. We got a trio of rookie running backs that made headlines for one reason or another. Last night, the David Montgomery tilt was palpable. I was very excited. Some people were, you know, Montgomery's been one of those guys where I guess polarizing to an extent, but you were, Nate and I might have been on one side of the debate, and there was kind of another side of that debate as well. And throughout, you know, whenever Montgomery flashed, kind of like whenever one of your guys flashed, you're going to let everyone know about it. So last night, you know, Cohen was kind of getting looks over him, you know, short yardage stuff. You know, Montgomery wasn't being utilized perhaps as much as some of the real hardcore truthers would have liked. Again, the theme of the show has been these small yet building sample sizes here. So the question that I pose, Ian, is Montgomery someone that you're looking to sell on? Where did you stand on Montgomery entering the season? Are you concerned? Should we be concerned?
I wasn't in on him entering the season because I thought he was kind of being drafted close to his ceiling. And, you know, you have Mike Davis, who we saw last season. You know, he put Rashad Penny on the bench for the whole year. Obviously, Tariq Cohen has been involved in the Chicago offense, you know, since he was a rookie. But no, now it's time to buy when everyone wants to sell. His snap rate last night, I know he didn't get all the touches till the fourth quarter, but 65%. Mike Davis played one snap last night. We are finally back to a two-back backfield in Chicago. Week one, it was Montgomery as the RB2 with Mike Davis as RB1. Tariq Cohen playing slot receiver. Week two, they had all three of them getting a good amount of snaps. Now week three, Montgomery is working as the lead back with, you know, Tariq and my guy Cordarrelle Patterson getting a little bit of a job in there sometime. So I really do think we're going to see Montgomery end up with between 15 and 20 touches per week moving forward. I get the concerns about, you know, his top-end speed and burst, but dude's still breaking a ton of tackles. I mean, it is funny seeing his, you know, Twitter stands go nuts when he breaks like 4 yards.
So good.
No, I think the best is coming for David Montgomery, because this Bears offense isn't going to be as bad as it was during the first 2 weeks of the season, and we kind of saw that a little bit yesterday. So, no, the best is definitely still to come for David Montgomery.
Dude, you got to be the premier Cordarrelle Patterson account out there, man. I get so excited for you whenever he gets a handoff or a little jet sweep or something like that.
Find up a quarterback. Find up a quarterback.
He does it all.
6 to midnight so fast.
He does it all, man. Nate, you again, the jury's still out, man. You may or may not have photoshopped a pair of bricks onto poor David Montgomery's feet earlier on this offseason. Again, you and I were on a particular side of this debate, maybe me not so far down as you, but through 3 weeks, anything that's kind of changed your opinion on Mr. David Montgomery?
You know, not really. The usage going up is fine, but you know, over the first 2 weeks of the season, there was questions. So 18 carries, 3.4 yards per carry, saved himself with a touchdown in week two. I mean, we can go ahead and say it, saved himself with a touchdown there. Hoping that the target share was higher, we're getting a look at it in week three. But the thing was, there were a lot of people saying that Tariq Cohen was just going to go away, a guy who was a massive part of this offense the year prior, who had a boatload of targets, was just going to fade away to the background. But guys like Tariq Cohen are few and far between in the NFL, and there's a spot for him, especially in this offense. If you had any other quarterback other than Trubisky back there, if this was a Mahomes offense, do you know how fucking good Tariq Cohen would be? Tariq Cohen would be absolutely electric. His ability, you know, as a receiver, as a rusher, his dynamism. As long as the usage is going to trend upwards, again, as was noted, looking at his snap share, if the usage is going to continue to trend upwards, then I'm buying. But I feel like David Montgomery, with his style of run, he's going to have to break a shitload of tackles, because I'm just not sure, you know, that touchdown dependency is the biggest part about his game to me. And how many times are they going to be close enough to the red zone with Trubisky and this defense? I feel like this defense is going to play well, and they're just going to be grinding clock. So the opportunity should go up. The rushing should go up. But I feel like he's just really touchdown dependent at this point. And, yeah, the verdict is still out. But I think it stinks.
Speaking of stinks, man, the Raiders marched into the Vikings dome, man, and got absolutely embarrassed. We don't have to spend a ton of time here because, again, it is the Raiders offense. But one thing to note, David Montgomery had his fair share of stands. So did Josh Jacobs. The Raiders invested a first round draft pick in Josh Jacobs, which is, you know, obviously that was some sort of red flag right there. You know, John Gruden came out, talked up his profile, his ability as a receiver, you know, his ability to run between the tackles, to get it done in space. All those coaching cliches that you want to hear to justify a first-round draft pick. The only problem, gents, is that through three games, the dude has three targets. It makes zero fucking sense to me, but I'm just a guy over here talking to Nate with a pair of beautiful fucking sunglasses on and my boy Ian. So maybe I don't know what I'm doing, but three targets through three games, to me, is a bit concerning. Ian, were you all in on Josh Jacobs to start the season, or were you playing it safe and staying far the fuck away from anything Oakland Raider related?
I wasn't the biggest fan, but I still had a pretty good amount of exposure. We almost always see first-round running backs get really big roles. Why else would you draft them in the first round? And like you said, I mean, Gruden and Mayock, like within 24 hours of drafting him, just started, you know, gushing over his three-down ability and, you know, how he can pass block. I think, you know, Gruden did come out yesterday and already said they got to get him more targets. Like, no shit, man. Please do. His one was, like, so beautiful. He broke a couple tackles afterwards. It was kind of downfield, but
yeah.
Oh, the usage last week was apparently so messed up because, like, Jalen Richard literally outsnapped him last week, which is absurd. But they were saying on the broadcast that Jacobs was, like, IV'd up, you know, 48 hours. Yeah.
Game. He lost 10 pounds or some shit he was saying.
Yeah, like, so this last week was weird. But even that Chiefs game, Richard and Washington were still getting used as more of receivers than Jacobs. It's definitely not looking good. Hopefully what Gruden's saying about getting more targets comes true. It's not just coach speak, but if they don't make him a three-down back, like, we're going to see negative game script situations like this all year long in this Derek Carr offense. So, yeah. You know, certainly not looking too good.
Nate, anything else before we march ahead and talk about something hopefully a little more exciting than the Raiders offense?
Yeah, when you're a plotter that isn't targeted in the open pass game, that's going to be a problem for just about anybody. So, again, Ian makes a good point. He's a first-round draft pick, and the Oakland Raiders are going to look like fools if they don't put more of an opportunity share on him. So I would expect it to go up, because what we saw on film, you know, preseason, we all liked him. We knew that he wasn't a super athlete. He didn't test out as a super athlete. And that was the reason why a lot of people felt like he shouldn't have been a first-round pick. And to Ryan's credit, when he was drafted by Oakland, yeah, maybe it was a red flag. But as long as the usage is going to continue to go up, again, this is a guy that I'm buying. You're hoping that in the pass game he gets utilized a little bit more and his PPR floor goes up a little bit. You're hoping that the rushing touchdowns come back next week. You know, it's going to be an interesting game in Indy. I don't know. The verdict is out on these rookies. You just never know what you're going to get with these guys. But I tend to err on the side of athleticism. And I'm still a big fan of Miles Sanders and we're probably going to touch on him in a minute too.
We are, man. We got Miles Sanders queued up next. And as good as the rookie wide receiver class has looked, the rookie running back class has kind of looked the opposite through, again, only 3 weeks. But Miles Sanders is another interesting study here. Excited to get Ian's take on him. Graham Barfield, my pal Graham Barfield over at NFL.com, noted that Miles Sanders has seen at least one extra defender in the box on 57.1% of his carries so far, tied for Kerryon Johnson for the highest rate in the league. So that kind of provides a little context behind Sanders, 2.5 yards per carry, and Johnson's 3.2 yards per carry, respectively. So obviously some efficiency concerns. Unlike Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders was a player that Nate and myself, and again, excited to get Ian's take here as well, were collectively high on this offseason for a running back class that wasn't really much of anything athletically. Miles Sanders kind of set that bar, or at least was in that kind of Justice Hill range as far as, you know, NFL required athleticism was concerned. The problem in Philadelphia is that backfield and that time split. My whole thing with Miles Sanders has been it's just a matter of time. Talent's gonna end up kind of winning out. But if we're gonna talk about volume and snap shares and stuff like that, Jared Smola tweets out you know all the snap shares after the game's on Sundays, and last week he had Eagles running backs at 36% for Darren Sproles, 34% for Miles Sanders, and 33% for Jordan Howard. So a full-blown, you know, running back by committee there. Again, Miles Sanders was creeping up draft boards, you know, maybe leaving boards somewhere around the sixth round. So a decent enough redraft investment. Ian, where did you stand on Sanders here, and did you find yourself with a ton of them to enter the season, and where are your expectations going forward?
Yeah, I was Team Sanders over David Montgomery pretty much the entire offseason just because of the difference in their ADP, and I do think Sanders is the more talented prospect. We've heard this Eagles like front office and, you know, Peterson really gush over him the entire offseason too, and even like the first few weeks of the season. I mean, he was starting out of the gate. He was getting pretty good usage weeks one and two in terms of snaps and opportunity. You know, he had the touchdown callback week one, but the production wasn't there, but it seemed like everything was setting up for this last week to really be the home run game, you know, and to start the season where David Montgomery is backing up freaking Mike Davis to start the year. Daryl Henderson, you know, where the hell has he been? But Miles Sanders was that one guy, rookie running back that was starting, and it seemed like, you know, he was ready to take that role. Fumbles twice last week. You know, they pretty much had to take him out after that, and now they're stuck in this three-back timeshare. So we had I think it was their OC came out like today and say, you know, we still believe in Miles. Everyone fumbles the ball every once in a while. But at the same time, I mean, it doesn't seem like imminent that he's all of a sudden going to take on this workhorse role that we want. Peterson doesn't have a history at all in Philly of, you know, featuring a running back. But you look through the list of running backs he's had, and I don't think anyone really is close to Sanders when it comes to potential three-down ability. But he's just got to play better at this point. I mean, he's bounced a lot of runs. He doesn't look all that decisive for the time being, and obviously we're seeing that reflected in his numbers thus far. So I'm holding. I think, you know, by week eight or something, you know, somewhere in the second half of the season, we're going to see him take over as the Eagles starting running back. I wouldn't expect much production, you know, in the near term. And, you know, even his – he was lucky to kind of have as good a game as he did last week. And he had two downfield receptions that were pretty fluky and, you know, aren't really indicative of what he's going to bring on a weekly basis.
Yeah, Evan Silva and Adam Levitan, the established the run boys, man, they were talking up Miles Sanders throughout the offseason, snapping him up early with more or less kind of that same thought process that, you know, by the halfway point of the season, it is likely that just given talent alone, you know, Sanders was going to kind of have a hold on that backfield. Nate Sanders, a player that you are excited about, not the rosiest start to the season here, but probably safe to say that we are confident and quietly holding our shares very, very tightly here, man.
Yeah, you should be. I mean, this is the Philadelphia offense. It's a bit in flux, but you want players in good offenses, and you want players that have good athleticism that have draft capital to go with it. And Miles Sanders is kind of the total package again. You know, it was noted he was the one guy that was expected to really show up this year. But this is the most full-blown running back by committee I think I've ever seen. I mean, this is such a dead, even timeshare. You know, they just need to be 33.3% repeated, all three guys, and just totally split the shit three ways. But it's unfortunate that it's taken place. It's unfortunate that a 65-year-old Darren Sproles just won't go away already. I mean, The guy is having a renaissance year. I don't know what the hell is going on. And Jordan Howard, we talked about. Look, Jordan Howard's fine between the tackles. He's fine for a grinder back. The expectation is that Miles Sanders will leapfrog him. I'm not worried. I'm buying these guys up where people are scared because it's hard to get these running backs anyways. And if you can get a discount on the value, it's only going to go up. I mean, look at a guy like Ronald Jones, a guy that was dead. He was teetering on the edge of the earth, staring down at Dante Moncrief. And someone grabbed him by the back of the collar and was like,
so not yet. Not yet.
Yeah, come back in for a minute. And then all of a sudden, look at his value. I mean, you could have got him for essentially free. His value comes back up. So for guys like this, obviously the value is going to rebound. It only takes a game if you're looking to sell. But I see more consistency for a guy like Miles Sanders in the future.
One more back to kind of round out some rookie running back talk here. Tony Pollard was another interesting name from a profile standpoint, from an ADP standpoint. A lot of high-stakes players were kind of on him early. Another player that kind of Evan Silva touted early on and gave the benefit to those who do draft early because you're able to snap up a Tony Pollard in much later rounds than where he eventually ended up going. And I added Tony Pollard to the sheet a little bit later on just because he's coming off such a strong game. 13 for 103 and a score. Caught three balls for 25 yards. Had over 100 receptions during his time at Memphis. So we know, again, profile-wise, checks all the boxes, just happened to be stuck behind a pretty absurd, prolific runner in Daryl Henderson. But again, kind of, you watched him last week, you watched him throughout the offseason. At the time Elliott was holding out, you weren't concerned if you were a Cowboys fan because Pollard could step in and handle that true three-down role. Now, I bring him up here to get Ian's infinite wisdom because my question for Tony Pollard drafters is obviously last week against the Dolphins team, they're not going to play the Dolphins every week. I can't imagine they're going to be up by a boatload of scores every single week, although that offense does look really good with Dak Prescott right now. But the question is what – Pollard's talent obviously suggests that he should be, in his own backfield or splitting work or something like that. I just don't know how the Cowboys consciously fit him in into some sort of, volume type role, knowing that they just, had this whole back and forth with Elliott this offseason. They paid him. Elliott's, again, one of the true kind of workhorse backs. So where does Pollard fit in? Are you, we don't want anyone to get injured. Let's be clear about that. But you're essentially waiting for an Ezekiel Elliott injury to really get the full benefit, or do you see some sort of kind of role being carved out for Tony Pollard amongst Elliott's workhorseness?
I don't think he's going to be a standalone fantasy option. I think he will kind of keep a, if we have a situation where the Cowboys aren't just blowing a team out like we saw in week 1 and week 3, I think he can see 20-25% snaps per game, which that's more than we've seen the backups in recent year. Zeke's usually close to like an 80-90% guy, and Pollard, you said it, man. He looks great. I mean, he's a true change of pace option there. And he brings that, a little bit of enhanced receiving ability. The Alvin Kamara comparisons coming in, and I hate when we compare anyone to these good of players, but you can kind of see it. He has that smoothness. He has that kind of burst. So I see where people are coming from, but now he's just not. The thing is, like, he's got 16. All right. He's got this year, he's got 3 touches in the first quarter, 5 in the second, 10 in the third, and 16 in the fourth. So all of his carries are kind of coming with the game under wraps. I mean, week 1 and week 3, like, literally just drives at the end of the game where it's just Pollard, 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 handoff after handoff. Yeah. So he's not going to have the standalone value, but in my mind, he is the single best handcuff you can have in fantasy. That's over Malcolm Brown, over Madison, over Latavius Murray, because of how good this Cowboys offense looks. And like you said, he has that 3-down ability. So if something were to happen to Zeke, I mean, Pollard, fire him up as an RB1 immediately.
Yeah, league winning type potential, just given the talent, given the offense he currently resides. And I'm glad you brought up the Alvin Kamara comparison, because I was gonna kick it over to our guy Nate here, man, friend of the show. Fusu View is who I saw kind of retweeting the older draft season Alvin Kamara takes. Nate, I don't know where you fell with Tony Pollard the player. I'm not sure that he was a prospect that you and I spent a ton of time on this past offseason. So were you necessarily surprised to see how good he looked? looked this offseason? Were you surprised to see, you know, how the Cowboys were using him in Elliott's absence? Any Pollard-related thoughts?
The Tony Pollard stuff is really interesting because Ezekiel Elliott is considered, I mean, again, in Dynasty is a top two, top three back, you know, in Dynasty, and he's backing up Ezekiel Elliott, you know, for better or worse. And last week his snap share was 32%, but, you know, to what's been said, it's not going to be like that every week. 25% would be great. Now, you know, Ian noted when his carries have taken place, and I don't remember when Ben Tate's took place, but I sure as hell remember the value of Ben Tate running behind Arian Foster in that Texans offense. And maybe this could be a little bit of the same. And I do remember playing Dynasty back then and thinking, shit, if I could get my hands on Ben Tate as a backup when he gets his job as a starter somewhere else, you know, he's going to be a monster. And who knows what that's going to be because Tony Pollard just got drafted. So there's a long time that we're going to have to wait this thing out. The number one handcuff in fantasy, absolutely, for running backs. It makes total sense. But as far as Dynasty, I'd love to get a hold of him because, I mean, he might be outproducing some of the flex plays. If he's getting eight carries a game and three targets, he might be beasting guys like Duke Johnson, who we thought were going to have great years. I'm not even sure what Duke Johnson is at this point. So you got to be high on him. He's proved a lot better than I think I expected of him, especially considering the circumstances of where he came from and who he played with, right? Because Darrell Henderson, coming from the exact same school, gets drafted rounds before him, and here we are. So, you know, I like Tony Pollard. I've come around on him a lot. And in the Dallas offense, yeah, you love him.
For sure, man. We got another half a dozen or so things written down in the show sheet here. We're gonna pick out a couple more of these here, maybe two more tops. I could sit here and talk ball with Ian all night long, but let's wrap this thing up, man. What I want to know, one of these, and Ian, you and I talked a little bit yesterday, man, Mike Evans, I had written down here, the dude had his nuts out all afternoon long. 8 for 190 and 3. This was coming off of the week where, you know, everyone was ready to crown Chris Godwin the wide receiver one, which was a take this offseason, not necessarily a hot one, but it was a take nonetheless. And people figured, you know, Chris Godwin, this is a season to kind of surpass Mike Evans. But Mike Evans read the tweets, you guys, and he did what he does. So, Ian, anything on the Mike Evans versus Chris Godwin versus is Jameis going to allow either of these things to happen this season?
Yeah, I mean, this was like one of the most obvious, I think, breakout games ever just after seeing, you know, he could have easily had 2 touchdowns in week 2 with a little more accurate passes and things that were going on. So, you know, I'm saying it right now, week 4, Davante Adams is going to be what week 3 Mike Evans was. So he
I love it, man.
This week. But no, I mean, look, Mike Evans, you know, it's like him, AJ Green, and Randy Moss are the only guys to start their careers with this many straight 1,000-yard games. So everyone's kind of picking Chris Godwin or Mike Evans. Like, they're both awesome wide receivers. Why can't we treat them like, you know, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, as he's both, you know, two wide receiver ones in the same offense? So, yeah, I think they both can produce. We've seen that, no, the Buccaneers can't support 3 super relevant fantasy receivers. So, unfortunately, you know, it's not looking good for OJ Howard. But, no, I think Mike Evans and Chris Godwin can be just fine together. It's going to be a tough stretch for Mike Evans coming up. And look, when you're 6'5", 230, and guys ball skills, you can win any matchup. So, you know, tough stretch for him isn't that big of a deal. But, you know, now we got the Rams to leave, and Peters with some plus-size cornerbacks. Saints off to do a Marshawn Lattimore. And the Panthers, we've seen James Bradbury kind of win those matchups over the years. So I think we see Godwin kind of get back on track these next few games. But no, I mean, buy them both. I mean, they're both going to be really good. And we've seen, I think last week, like Bruce Arians is not going to run his entire offense through Peyton Barber. So, which didn't make any sense. Like, why are you coming out of retirement to just feed Peyton Barber a feature role?
Yeah, the weirdest thing, man. Weirdest thing. We got, speaking of running backs, man, let's end on this note. We're going to get Ian's take on it. Kick it over to Nate, and then Nate will get us the hell out of here. I add, again, another late add for me, only because the Patriots, I believe, lost fullback James Devlin for the season, I think is what
correct.
It was. Yep. So that huge reverberations through that backfield. We already had tons of question marks piling up for Sony Michel. Rex Burkhead has resurrected, and he looks to be a factor. We always joke every offseason about, oh, just buy the cheapest Patriots running back. That's who's going to end up winning you fantasy football weeks. And it looks to be happening once again. You know, Sony Michel's ADP was that third, fourth round, whatever it was. But Rex Burkhead out here contributing and looking like a better player than Sony Michel. So, Ian, wrap this thing up, bro. Tell us, give us the Rex Burkhead, Sony Michel, Patriots backfield summary, what we're doing going forward, and kind of what your concern or where that panic meter kind of sits with Sony Michel.
So the big thing with Sony Michel coming into the season was that, okay, he's going to be the early down guy and James White will take pass downs, but who cares? It's the Patriots offense. Sony can, you know, maybe even lead the league in rushing touchdowns. We all just kind of counted out Rex, and we had no idea he would kind of have this big of a role. And now, look, it's week three. James White wasn't in the picture. Patriots were 3-touchdown home favorites against the Jets defense. They didn't even have Moser or Quinnen Williams. Like, you could not possibly write up a better smash spot for Sony Michel. What happens? 22% snap rate. Career low, 9 touches. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And he's not doing anything to help his cause. It'd be one thing. You know, like, I understand they got multiple starting offensive linemen out. Now Devlin's out. But the guy, he might have broken a tackle last week. He didn't in the first 2 weeks of the season on 36 touches, which is just insane. And, you know, look, I'm a big proponent of preseason, more in terms of opportunity than efficiency. But, you know, I think we let that one run he had in week three where he looked freaking great, you know, burst second level, was making dude miss, you know, kind of let one run get to us a little bit too much. And, you know, just now that we know this Patriots backfield is going to be a 3, even a little bit 4 back, man, it's concerning how involved, you know, it's only like 10-15%, but Brandon Bolden is getting legit snaps in the it's kind of comical. I think Belichick is kind of fucking with us. So it's, you know, it's not good for Sony Michel here on out. And, you know, with Rex Burkhead playing 75% snaps this last week, like, it does seem like there's a realistic chance that Sony's kind of like in the doghouse just from not playing good. Like, who knows what Belichick thinks? And Sony doesn't have this, you know, cemented role. So maybe he'll turn around, but it's not looking good.
The Sony pick was always a super weird one for a New England front office. And obviously it's been getting quieter and quieter for him through the first couple weeks of the season here. Nate, anything at all regarding the Patriots backfield, or just do you want to just get us the hell out of here, buddy?
No, I mean, I think he touched on everything. The hardest part about New England is always going to be predicting who's the guy week to week. And I know that people said, yeah, go out and buy the cheapest New England Patriots back and you'll win your league. But it's like, yeah, then you start that guy and he gets 3 touches. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what week. I mean, Brandon Bolden, I didn't even know he was still on the Patriots. This guy's been, you know, re-immersed into this offense all of a sudden. And yeah, James White wasn't there. It's just a weird deal. I mean, the Patriots look incredible. A couple weeks into the year, I realize they've played Pitt. Pitt looks like they may or may not be great. Miami stinks. New York Jets obviously have got their injuries and stuff. They weren't great. But, you know, New England, man, they're all about momentum, and they're building on this. This will be an interesting matchup in Buffalo next week. But as far as Sony Michel, if he's cheap enough, I'm buying him. But it's such an unpredictable thing. Who knows? Will Rex Burkhead be able to stay healthy? I think it takes, you know, if he gets hurt, you get more confidence in starting a guy like Sony Michel. But really, week to week, I don't know who I'm confident in starting in the New England backfield whatsoever, because the name of the game is volume, right? That's what we want. And if I can't validate which guy's going to get that volume, man, I would have a very hard time starting any one of these guys at any given time. Anyways, man, Ian, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you guys. This was fun.
You exceeded expectations.
We gotta get Ian back on here ASAP, man. Dude ran the marathon with us just now.
You did, man. This is definitely
time, one of the
funnest guests that we've had so far, man. If you've got anything that you want to plug, feel free to do it now.
Yeah, you follow me on Twitter at iHeart. It's IHAR tits with a Z. Don't forget the Z. You know, I'm going weekly injury dashboard, wide receiver, cornerback matchups. Look at every matchup around the league. I break down every backfield around the league. And debuting this week, top mismatches around the league. So be sure to keep an eye out for that Wednesday night, Thursday morning. And yeah, boys, let's have a hell of a week 4, huh?
Love that. Cool. I love
awesome,
that.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for coming on. It's been a blast. You're as good as Ryan claimed. Ryan said this guy's going to come in and just smash the show and sure as shit rocking a UCLA jersey.
Nothing. Dude, no further questions for Heian. Heian, as you start the show, I can't believe
you
botched
Heian. Man, I was going to say Lan, but I can't tell. It's the goddamn I. We got to talk to somebody about the alphabet. So, all right, man. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, dude. Take it easy.
All right, man.
Thanks, Heian, bro.